All right, I think we are live. So, welcome everyone to the first episode of Sigmar's Symposium. This will be a interview podcast I've started for 2025. And I'm really excited about it. I have some good guests lined up that I think all of you will enjoy. And one of them, Zach Logos Revealed, has joined us tonight. So, welcome, Zach.
Hey brother, it's a pleasure to be on. It's been a long time since we've had a discussion.
It really has been too long. I admire your content, especially the Logos Academy. It's really good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I think I'm going on 2 years. I just hit my 2 year mark actually of doing my show, and I've done a lot of interviews. I've met quite a few interesting people, including yourself. It was quite a pleasure to have a nice chat with you on my show.
Well, I really appreciate that. So you're one of the most erudite, I would say, members of our movement. So that's why I wanted to bring you on today to discuss political prospects for 2025. So before we get into that, though, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience? I'm sure you need no introduction, but if you want to introduce yourself, go ahead.
Yeah, certainly. For those who aren't familiar, obviously I go by the handle Logos Revealed online. My name is Zach Kidd. I run a show, I guess you call it a program, whatever you want to call it. Typically 3 days a week, sometimes more, sometimes less. It fluctuates depending on what's going on behind the scenes. But I try to cover things in the topic of philosophy, culture. I go a lot, obviously, into the Jewish problem, which is a big component in the modern age of what we have going on in our societies. And I try to do my best to educate people on subjects that they're not necessarily going to get if they go to high school or college or even, some average YouTube videos. I guess you'd call it more esoteric knowledge. I try to go into that the best I can on my shows. And I do that on Odyssey and Rumble, as well as Twitter. You can find me at Logos Revealed on Odyssey, and it's Logos Revealed on the other two platforms, but there's just an I at the end of it.
Yeah, that's a great assessment of your work, I would say. I highly recommend it, especially your Logos Academy series. And today we're going to be discussing political prospects for 2025. So I think it would be a good idea to start with America, since that's where we are. And the first question I really want to discuss with you is, what is the right or our movement's primary goal for 2025?
Yeah, that's a really good question. To maybe go away from the term right, and as you adjusted and said, our movement, I think our goal is actually to put pressure on the literal right, the right wing as we know it, the Republican Party, this conservative quote unquote. I really don't like the term because they haven't conserved anything ever. But this quote unquote conservative apparatus. I think our goal right now should be to put pressure on them to continue to shift the Overton window. I think in 2024 we saw a pretty major shift of the Overton window, where these things that were previously taboo topics, such as again the Jewish problem or political corruption on an actual deep basis, not just these whack job Q things. It's the Illuminati and all that nonsense, but true analysis of what's going on politically in our civilization. In the collective West, we've seen a really big mass awakening to that. But now we have to actually put pressure on that system itself that is propping up this corruption and degeneracy that we see today, right? And again, pointing at this so-called conservative party, they claim to be against the left and against degeneracy and for these traditional values, but you see these things like Lady MAGA, where they've got a tranny representing the MAGA movement. They're saying gays for Trump and blacks for Trump, right? So they push all of the same communistic, multicultural values that the left does, just in a more traditional fashion, as they would call it, right? So we need to put pressure on them to actually advocate for, well, first off, white racial consciousness, which is something they never talk about. It's a completely foreign concept in the political apparatus today. And secondly, to push them to have actual traditional conservative values, really stamping down on things that are degenerate and no longer standing for them, drawing a hard line. I think that's the main goal that we have for 2025 is to seriously put a lot of pressure specifically on that Republican apparatus.
Very well said. In my notes here that I've written, I actually had destroying the center right as what I was going to answer this question. And by center right, I mean people like the James Lindsays, the Ben Shapiros, Jordan Petersons, all of these unsavory characters who get labeled right wing. But as we know, they don't oppose the degeneracy of our society. They don't advocate for our racial consciousness, I should say. And then they promote all these bad ideas like Zionism, like anti-racism. So I think we're in, we have a lot of agreement here that the center right, you could say, is the problem.
Yeah, I agree entirely. You know, obviously the left is equally a problem, but the left, at least, you know what the problem is, right? They're very upfront about their views and what they're doing. This right wing conservative side, conservative aspect, they're not upfront about it. They're very deceptive and sneaky, right? So they try to act as if they are, well, I think they appeal to the average white American with their rhetoric, but they don't actually hold the views that are helpful to the average white American. Instead, you'll never actually hear, you know, like a Donald Trump stand up on stage and say, you know, I advocate for white America and I think white people need to have their own, you know, organizations and communities. You see this in every quote unquote community, right? Blacks have black only colleges and black organizations advocating for their power and them having wealth and things. You see this with Jewish organizations. I mean, there's literally like Pacific Islander organizations, right? And they're such a small fraction of the population. Yet there are no white organizations or white advocacy groups, and especially not that would ever be acknowledged by the mainstream.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up. Like it's criminal to advocate for our race in most countries, and even states like New York. So that's a big problem we got to fix. And I know I'm not the first to say that the center right is a bigger problem for our movement than the left is. Like, this is old stuff that the original National Socialists wrote about. So it's certainly not a new idea, but we see the problem of the center right. They're gatekeepers. They're sheepdogs. They keep white Americans away from addressing any of the problems that are plaguing our society. And yeah, I think you've summarized it very great.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we have a problem where they will address the symptoms of the problem, but not the problem itself. Right. So we have this very corrupt political system that is, in essence, the root of this problem. And you have all these little smaller symptoms of that that start to branch themselves out, right? The vast different types of degeneracy. You've got the transgenderism. You've got open advocation of pedophilia. You've got the multiculturalism, pornography culture, all these different things that are stemming out of this root. But the root itself is rotten and corrupted. And the problem is these people that are inside of the political system itself, they sit at the very top of the tree. So they don't want to cut the root down because then they themselves have to start anew. They lose their social status, their political status that they have, and they don't want to lose these things. So in the interest of their own well-being, they refuse to point to these problems and only the branches themselves of the problems, the stems of it, so that, you know, this they get to keep their position, right? It's kind of a self-interest game, right? Which is, I guess you would agree with me, is a big problem in society, individualism. We need some kind of true community-driven understanding moving forward.
Absolutely. Individualism is a problem because it prevents us from acting for the benefit of our people, for our race. If we're all individuals. So I think you're really touching on something, though, when you say self-interest, because if we look at figures like James Lindsay, like Jordan Peterson, and certainly like Benjamin Net- sorry, Ben Shapiro, I can't stand him. They all live these very cushy lives. Shapiro obviously is advocating for his own group, but Peterson and Lindsay, they just want to maintain their position where they are in society. They have a lot of money. They get to go to these conferences. They get to network with the upper echelons of society, but they deliberately steer people away from fixing the problems in our society, like anti-whiteism, like this undying obedience to Israel. So yeah, it's a very grave problem, the center right. I guess that would segue us into the next question I wanted to ask you is, what does our movement have going for us, and how can we utilize what we have going for us to our advantage?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll preface actually by stating that, you know, when we use the term movement, I think it's very important to be clear what we mean, right? Because this is a very broad term in the sense of where we're at today. So when I use the term movement, I mean, in the current moment, the mass consciousness, this movement of our awakening in a very certain direction, right? Towards racial consciousness, towards self-interest, and not, again, not on an individualistic scale, but as the whole, for the collective. So that's what I mean when I use the term movement, because there is no, you know, party right now where we can say, hey, you want to join Zach and Sigmar and help us take back our country. There is no, you know, party you can just kind of sign up for and put your name down on the sheet and here we go, now we know what we're doing. So I think right now what our movement does have going for us is we are, again, seeing that mass awakening. People are truly beginning to question what they're seeing in front of them. They're beginning to have a healthy distrust for the government, recognizing that they are not being advocated for and wishing to have such. So that's step one. Obviously, you know, we've seen some bigger names in the mainstream come out in the most recent months. Dan Bilzerian's a good example. You know, you got Candace Owens. For what it's worth, I think her rhetoric still is not great. It definitely needs improvement. She, you know, obviously can't advocate for us because she's not of us, right? She's not our people. So she has to advocate for, you know, going against the Jewish problem on this kind of, you know, Christian scale, right? Because she physically can't be a part of a racial apparatus. So I think the awakening is one thing that we certainly have going for us, which again, this is something where a lot of people, they say, oh, you know, 2024 has been a great year. We've woken so many people up and now, you know, we can relax. And I think we have to be careful about not taking our foot off the pedal. I think actually we should be pressing a lot harder, right? As we said earlier, putting some pressure on that conservative piece of our political system, because if we let off now, we alleviate the pressure, and we need to keep that pressure in order to push these people into our direction ideologically. So just one really good example where you can see the pressure that these people are experiencing. Elon Musk, lately with this H-1B thing that's been a really hot topic, he had made comments on Twitter, and you know, people obviously didn't agree with him, and they put pressure on him and challenged his views. But what's most important about this is when those people challenged his views, Elon Musk, who is a, you know, billionaire running several companies, sat for over 24 hours on his phone arguing with white nationalists with, you know, anonymous accounts and frog profile pictures, right? So clearly they feel this pressure, and they're now looking at how do they respond to it, right? What are they going to do to respond? So that's what we must keep doing, is consistent pressure on these people so that they are advocating for the things that we want them to.
Very well said. I think a big theme is the breaking of the post-war consensus. So as people who are familiar with American history know, after World War II, we had this post-war consensus, which is where everybody came and agreed. And well, we're reaping the consequences of that now. But fortunately, it's starting to break, and it's breaking at a rapid pace. So I totally agree with you. And I think organization is the key word we need to have in mind. we can't just all be individuals. We have to be organized, because if we want to influence the opinion of these people in power, like Elon Musk, I know he's not on our side, but I think he can potentially be useful if we get some ideas to him. And I think organization is the key way to do that. And there are some organizations working. We have the Homeland Party in Britain. We have groups like the Old Glory Club in America. So what do you think about that? What do you think about getting organized and not just acting as atomized individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. That's number one on the list is these things have to be grassroots. You know, our solution is not going to come from inside the corrupt system itself, right? If the system is so rotten that it's only allowing in corrupt scumbags that are looking out for their own self-interest, obviously that system is never going to allow us to work within it in order to, you know, fix the problems that are existent, right? It benefits off of that corruption. So it's going to do everything it can to exile us out of it. So our job now is to create grassroots organizations that can combat this. And you know, one other point I just wanted to make on pushing these people in our direction, because like you said, you know, obviously they're not our people ideologically, and they never will be. They're always going to be looking out for their own self-interest. But take that example of Candace Owens that we used a little bit earlier. Candace Owens, you know, 2 years ago, she would have never talked about these problems. She would have never been talking about Israel or what the Jews have done in history or anti-Christian sentiments and these things. This never would have been touched on without her comment sections underneath all of her videos constantly spamming, hey, did you know that this guy is Jewish? Hey, did you know that Israel did this? Hey, did you know the Mossad was involved in this? And they constantly kept jumping on her with this until eventually she would actually look like the bad person if she ignored these comments, because they became the majority of her comment section. So she was forced to address it, right? And now whether she's addressing it because she actually cares or because she feels that social pressure, it's kind of irrelevant, right? What matters is that she's addressing it, and that is what works in our favor. And you'll see this, that these people that are self-interested and they're cowards, as that whole shift happens, they're all going to start addressing this, even if it is for their own self-interest, just so they're not getting, you know, nagged at by a bunch of people with frog profile pictures on Twitter, but just so that they can still keep their relevancy. So that's why that pressure is so necessary. You know, we saw that with Candace, a perfect example of how it works.
Yeah, Candace is a great example of us really pushing the narrative, pushing the Overton window. While we're on this topic, I kind of want to discuss the civil war going on in the Daily Wire. The Daily Wire, obviously, is a very corrupt Jewish organization that is hostile to us. But even among these normie, Republican, mainstream conservative viewers of an organization like the Daily Wire, you're seeing people in the comments talking about the USS Liberty, for example. And you're seeing people criticizing Ben Shapiro and Shapiro getting ratioed on Twitter. And I know they've been cleaning house. They've been purging people who dare touch that third rail, like Candace. And I have reason to believe Brett Cooper suffered a similar fate. But I think 2025, we should really focus our political, we should really focus our firepower on organizations like the Daily Wire, because that is a chief agent of containment. It is a pillar of the center right. And I think we can do some significant damage to it this year, and that should be one of our goals.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the only thing that they have going for them is physical resources, right? They have financial assets. They have, you know, the media that will back them and benefit them. But they do not have the truth on their side, and they do not have public consensus anymore. They used to, you know, and maybe 2 years ago they still did. But as you said, you know, these people are all getting ratioed consistently on Twitter. Their whole comment sections are being, you know, just completely downpoured with people that are having healthy sentiments against their bullshit that they're spewing. And these are the organizations that need to be pressured consistently until they lose their, well, they lose their importance and their meaning completely, because that's a big problem right now that we have, especially with the older generation of conservatives in our country. They're still stuck watching these, news channels and listening to these talking heads, reading these conservative, quote unquote, articles, and it's keeping them in that box, right? Of God's chosen people and our greatest ally and all these stupid falsities that these people spew out of their mouths just because someone else has said them. So if we can get our people to stop trusting that and instead trusting their own, their people, the people that are on the same level as them, not the system that governs them, that will push us in the right direction. And then this is where, we talked about these grassroots organizations, which is going to be predominantly built up of young men, but eventually we're going to need the older generation for financing, right? We need people to finance us. We need to have those assets and those physical abilities that these big organizations like Daily Wire and the ADL have if we want to actually get anywhere moving forward.
Absolutely. And I guess while we're on the topic of the boomer question, we can talk about MAGA for a bit. In the show notes, I wanted to ask you how, as National Socialists, white positive people, we should interact with MAGA. I, for one, do not believe Donald Trump is going to be the savior of America. Shocking opinion, I know. But it is an interesting question. How should racially conscious people on our side interact with this MAGA movement that has now come to power, and how can we steer it in the direction we want? So, if you want to go ahead and answer that, I'm all ears.
Yeah, it's a very good question, actually. So I think for starters, one mistake that we should err away from is being extremely hostile to the MAGA movement, right? Because the thing is, a lot of people, and rightfully so, just to preface, a lot of people are rightfully angry at this movement and see it as a subversive entity that's working against our interests and gatekeeping us away from, again, true racial consciousness and actually advocating for our people. But we have to be very level-headed and disciplined here, because if we go as a direct hostile attack against these people, we're going to lose their base, right? Which is the mass conservative populace that we want on our side. So instead of being hostile, we should be judgmental more so, right? We should really be analyzing what they're doing, using propaganda to display some of the mistakes that the movement itself has made, some of the inconsistencies in what they advocate for, things like that, right? Like showing, Lady MAGA, right? We should be having propaganda against things like this and say, look, like this is not actual advocation for us in any way, shape, or form. I am an actual conservative, true conservative. I want to conserve traditional values, and I don't believe that transgenderism is a traditional value. Therefore, I don't believe we should be parading transgenders around on a stage simply because they voted for the candidate that we prefer. That's insanity, and that's not true advocation of ideals. This is just, again, this is like football politics, right? People get in this right and left wing and they go, I'm the Republican Party and you're the Democrat Party and I want my team to win. I want my, woo, Trump won. Trump won the election, so my team is winning. It's no different than, the same 30-year-old men that when their shift is over, they're screaming on the couch with the beer in their hand because the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Broncos, right? It's the exact same thing, but in the form of politics, and that needs to change. We need real advocation. This isn't a sport. We're talking about our literal existence at this point.
I'm in complete agreement with you there. And I think the H-1B visa issued just in the past few weeks really demonstrates this because there's a clip on Twitter where it's Trump from 2016 where he's saying that H-1Bs shouldn't be allowed and that we should cut them off, which is the correct take. And then right after that, there's a clip of him from earlier this month, I believe, maybe in December. Where he's saying we need more H-1Bs. It's the American way to let people, high-skilled immigrants come in because they make America better, all that bullshit. So, but the th thing I want to point out is it didn't have any commentary from anyone. It was literally just a clip of Trump from 2016 and then a clip from last month, right next to each other. And it was just very, it was going viral. And I think that's an example of good propaganda. It shows that Trump is not the savior that we that we're looking for. And I think it really works well on the boomer crowd in particular, because they are fanatically obedient to Donald Trump. So when they when you're like, oh, this is what he said in 2016, and you agreed with that, I agreed with that, here's what he's saying now, it makes them question their undying loyalty to God Emperor Trump, I guess you could say, if you want to make a joke about it. So, yeah, I think you're totally right that we can't be too openly hostile, but we can't also just let everything slide. Judgmental was a good word to use, and using propaganda. So while we're talking about MAGA, I also wanted to segue to the Israel question and Zionism. So Israel is currently wrapping up its war. It will probably be done in the next 2 years, maybe this year. And a lot of Americans, unfortunately, are still rabid Zionists. The number is like 1/4 of American conservatives are pro or are dispensationalist Christians. So what do you think we can do about American Zionism and attacking this idea of Israel as our greatest ally?
Yeah, I think yet again, a lot of this will come through propaganda and us displaying truly what Israel is and what it does, right? Most of the people that are spewing these things like God's chosen people and our greatest ally, most of these people have zero education on the history of Israel and what these people have actually done, right? They don't know about the founding of Israel and how, you know, World War I was really a premise for this. Most people have no idea what the Balfour Declaration is or the Deir Yassin massacre, where they, you know, literally just slaughtered the Arabs that were on that land so that they could have the land themselves. People don't know about these things, right? They don't know about the USS Liberty or Israel's involvement in 9/11. And if they had this education, if public consensus was all exactly the same, if the knowledge was the same for everybody, they would naturally just not want to support Israel, right? Because no one in their right mind could if you knew the things that you and I know. But the average person doesn't know. So, and they're not going to pick up a book to know. And a lot of them won't watch a documentary to know. So we have to put this in very layman's terms. It has to be put down to, you know, and as much as we all hate this, because especially, you know, someone like you or myself, we are a little more intellectual. We like to research things and dig into them deeper. Well, we need to start sloganeering. You know, we need to start putting this into super, super simple terms for people. This is how the government is able to function right now, right? Through COVID, they did things like build back better, right? These idiotic, asinine terms with little to no meaning. We have to take up some of these types of rhetoric if we want to actually convince people of the truth, right? So we have to use propaganda to make people know what the truth is, because they are the only way that they take in information is via propaganda. They refuse to do it any other way.
Yeah, you're totally right about that. We need propaganda, and we need people who these boomers will actually listen to. I think Candace Owens, she's not on our side, but she's doing a great service when she's talking about the USS Liberty, because these boomers, they will listen to an American veteran. If you show someone in a veteran cap and say he served America, that'll make them hear what he has to say. And then spreading that to 2 million people, at least, where you just go off on Israel, that's a great thing to do. I've noticed that boomers, they don't want to research things, but they're passive. They want to watch content, and they want to watch just their friendly faces. They don't like exploring anything new. So, yeah, I think we can attack Israel and Zionism if we can just capture the narrative and get some faces saying our talking points to these boomers. So that kind of is all I wanted to talk about America. I wanted to get into Europe for a little bit. But before we get into Europe, is there anything else you want to say on this topic?
Yeah, just to add, you know, with this this concept of the boomers kind of having a hard time researching things, wanting to have it spoon-fed to them. One big thing that's also problematic, you know, you mentioned they'll listen to like a veteran or they'll listen to a black woman, right? Because they've been programmed that's a virtuous thing to do, is get your political views from a black woman to show that you're not hateful, right? Things like this. But one problem that we have, and this is another thing that we have to work on psychologically breaking out of our people, is that a lot of them, especially of that older generation, they have this very unique American individualism, right? The American dream. You know, you've heard the term, you know, pick yourself up by the bootstraps. You've heard terms like this. And this is one of the catalysts for the lack of ability for us to have true community, because someone like you or myself, who's a little bit younger, that generation, they will not listen to you because of their own ego. Their ego will not allow them to believe that somehow this, you know, as they would see it, snot-nosed 27-year-old knows more than they do, right? That's, to them, it's like an insult on their intelligence, so they can't admit that they're wrong on a topic. But if a bigwig in a suit on Fox News says it, well, now they can, because he has high societal status, right? So they already know he's more educated than they are, and they're willing to secede their views to him. This is something that we have to break out of our people tremendously if we want to make progress, because it's a very big obstacle in our way at the moment.
Yeah, I think you actually put it very well on one of your shows, where you brought it back to Plato in his allegory of the cave. So for those who weren't aware, these people were chained up in a cave. They were watching basically shadows on the wall, and they were thinking that's their reality. Someone comes in, tells them they're just shadows, there's a sun outside, and they eventually kill him. But they don't listen to him because they're so focused on just their imaginary world of the shadow puppets that you kind of have to play that game, even though it's cringe, even though it's stupid. You have to. That's how you'll get them out, because they won't listen to you if you just confront them with the truth and say, go outside and see the sun. So I think that dovetails our point nicely on the America section. And I did want to get into Europe, because we have some interesting things going on in Europe at the moment. So the first question I actually had written for you is, do you think is in a worse position, Europe or America?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's really hard to actually answer that question, because there's a lot of variables to each one. So I think there's an argument that when it comes to the racial problem, which is one of the biggest pieces to this, I think America's in a worse spot racially. We've had this problem for a long time. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot harder to wake up the average American to racial consciousness than it will be the average Irishman. Right? Because we're a mixture of Euro mutts, and we've already been inculcated with this idea that being racist is the worst thing ever, and being American means anybody can be American, right? That's a big problem. Now, when it comes to the actual political abilities, right, to function in the system, I think Europe is in a worse position, right? They don't have these free speech laws. There's a lot of, you know, groups in Europe that are actually banned from, you know, running for office just because their views are, quote unquote, too radical. Right. So I think it's actually hard to say which one is in a worse circumstance. I'm a believer that this revolution that needs to happen, first off, it has to be a global one. Yes. It's not saying we need globalism, but it's saying that we need a global consciousness of this problem. You know, we saw with World War II, the biggest issue was Germany woke up to this problem and was able to stomp it out, but no one else woke up in step with them. And therefore we fought each other, right? Because only one was awake to the problem, not everybody. Indeed. So it does need to be a global awakening to this problem. But I'm a true believer that it will most likely spawn from America. I think America has the best means. We have the best, you know, rural landmass where people can truly organize independently and physically, grassroots. We have the best resources to do these things. And additionally, we have the best political ability where, you know, you can get most of the censorship that you experience today in America is social censorship, right? Not actual legal censorship where people are legally barring you from doing things. It's more of that social pressure or putting pressure on your finances or the social media companies cracking down on you. Less of it is actual legal persecution. It certainly exists, but it's certainly not as bad as it is in Europe where, you know, you can literally get jailed just for saying, I don't know if it was 6 million, right? That's really bad. So I think it has to start in America, but it is hard to say who's actually in a worse spot.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a good point about social censorship versus legal censorship, because obviously in Europe you have people like Sam Melia in England who was jailed and couldn't see his friends just for putting up stickers that said it's okay to be white. In Germany, you have people like Ursula Haverbeck, may she rest in peace, hero of our people. And in America, we don't have that same problem. America, due to our geography also, there's a lot more places you can go. Like, you can go to the Ozarks with Arval and his community if you want to. But you can't really do that in a country like Ireland, where it's just so small and they've imported so many people that the Irish are on track to be a minority before the end of the century, unfortunately. So I hate to say it, but I think Europe is in a worse position than America. But they also do have a stronger concept of the ethnos. And this is one point where I would say that they actually are doing better than America, is that in America, we think, or we don't think this, but the average person does, they think that everybody can just become an American. You step off the boat, you like the flag, you're an American. And it's really a flawed view, because Americans, we're talking about heritage Americans, people who built the country, Anglo-Saxon, and then eventually later the Germans, the Irish, etc. So what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, this was intentional, by the way, this how it's gone about that, you know, people look at anyone as being able to be American. This was an intentional process that was wrought by the media in order to create this this disunity, disorganization that we have today. It was completely on purpose, right? We have the melting pot theory, which was done by Israel Zangwill. Was a Russian-born Jew who moved to the United States and wrote this this play. Additionally, you know, you look at the Statue of Liberty, right? Bring me your masses, your huddled, yada, yada. This was done by Emma Lazarus, right? And another Jew who was literally putting on this this Statue of Liberty, which is supposed to be, you know, kind of like the symbol of bringing people in, that anybody can join. And this is a very big problem. I also want to point out, give me your sick, you're tired, you're hungry, right? We're asking with that quote, we're asking for the weakest elements to be joining our society. That is not what America was built on. America was built on the idea that we want strong individuals who are capable of building up the land, building a civilization. We don't want the weak and the hungry. This is a very Judeo-Christian-esque type of value,
yes,
of bringing in these weakest of assets underneath our umbrella of tolerance and acceptance.
There does seem to be a war on excellence, and just the advocacy, or I'm losing my train of thought, where you just advocate for the lowest common denominator. You oppose excellence. You oppose people who can actually do great deeds. And the Founding Fathers would not have wanted this. The immigration they did want, they wanted it restricted, first of all, but they only wanted it from Europeans and from high-quality Europeans of moral character. And that's something we've strayed away from very much as a country in the year 2024. I guess I also wanted to touch on this as a potential weakness in Europe that can be fixed. Where we as Americans can help our European brothers, and that is the stranglehold that the Judeo-American Empire has over Europe. So Europe, they're not really sovereign. They're kind of obedient to America. They do whatever Washington and Tel Aviv tells them to. They're an occupied country, as Thomas 7-7 would say. And, or they're occupied countries, sorry. So I think for Americans, we really need to focus on just the stranglehold that Israel has over us. I'm sorry, I can't speak tonight. And then that'll have downstream ripple effects. And I think the Europeans will understand that as we free ourselves from Israel's influence and from Tel Aviv. So what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think that's a very solid idea. I don't think I have anything to add on that idea, actually. I just agree with it.
Well, I do have one other thing I want, or a couple other things, actually. But one of the main ones I wanted to talk about for the Europe section is the role of Russia. Because Russia has never been a Western European country. Obviously, it's located in Eastern Europe. But it's always been kind of separate from the European continental political system. It's always done its own thing and been seen as a pariah. I guess I shouldn't say totally done its own thing. But I do think there is a divide there where it's kind of just this pariah, and it has been throughout history. But now it seems that the Russians are the ones who are advocating for a more traditional society. They've banned a lot of these bad things, like these drugs, vape pens that we have in America. You can't get them in Russia. And Russia, they're advocating for a traditional marriage. They have no sympathy for this transgender stuff. And it's very tempting to think that, like, if you're a German and you see the Nord Stream pipeline get blown up, why should we be allied with America when we can throw our lot in with Russia? So what's your view on Russia more broadly in the political sphere?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think they set a good example in the modern age, at least, of what needs to be done. You know, pretty much the way I look at it, look at how our media apparatus responds to Russia today, right? They equate Putin with Hitler, which obviously we know all they did was lie about that man. So obviously if they're equating somebody to the guy that they want to always demonize with lies, that other person they're probably just trying to demonize to stifle anybody actually hearing out what he's trying to do or what he has to say. So that in itself shows that Putin is doing something that these people dislike. And I think it is those traditional values that you're talking about. So when it comes to politically, what is beneficial for us with Russia is they set a good example for us. I don't think they're hostile to the United States. The way I see it, we look at Germany in World War II. Germany was never hostile to the U.S. However, the media and the political sphere at that time basically convinced the average American that was the case, right? That Germany, they're rounding up Jews right now, but boy, oh boy, they're coming for America, right? That was the real big thing, is they're a threat to our democracy and our liberty. And that is essentially what they're going to try to do here with Russia, is they're trying to convince people that they're a massive threat to us and that we need to be worried about them. And, you know, same Cold War scare that they were doing 40 years ago, right? Just on a different scale now. So I think Russia as itself as a political entity, I don't have any problems with them. I'm not, you know, like a Russia number one kind of a guy. And I'm certainly not putting all of my eggs in one basket behind Putin. But I think that there is some things that we can take away from what they're doing today as an example of what we should be doing now, right?
I agree. And I think Russia is just the regional power in Eastern Europe and Eurasia. And I do want to say that the people in Israel, the Jews, they absolutely hate Russia. If you just listen to what they have to say and who they back this Zelensky clown who's sent millions of white Ukrainians to the meat grinder just to die. And Ukraine's going to lose the war. I believe it was intentional on his part why he did that. But yeah, it used to not be this way, but now the Jews, and specifically the ones in Israel, they absolutely hate Russia, and you can just listen to their own words. I think, as an American, it pains me to say this, but Europe would be better if they had less ties with America and more ties with Russia, because in America, well, the Frankfurt School was installed by the American tank. All of this DEI stuff, the transgender stuff, it came from Jews in California and New York, I hate to say. So I know a lot of people might disagree with me on that, but that's just how I feel. I don't think Russia is this Uber-based, it's going to save us all. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think that since our enemies hate Russia, there is something to be learned from there. So I guess the other thing I wanted to discuss was the Ukraine-Russia war. I think we're going to probably see the conclusion of this war in the coming, probably this year, maybe next year. And Ukraine cannot win this war. I'm fairly certain of that. But a more interesting question is, what will be the political ramifications of Ukraine's loss? And how can we utilize this for our purposes? And I think the biggest thing we should, our main talking point should be, is that millions of white Ukrainians went to die for nothing because this Jew Zelensky told them to. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a good talking point. One thing, though, I actually disagree on is that this war will end. I actually think this will culminate into a third world war globally. I think that's really the goal that they're trying to foment here. You know, as you said, you know, Zelensky is Jewish. He's not Ukrainian, not at least in spirit, right? Maybe he has Ukrainian citizenship, but he's not actually, you know, advocating for the Ukrainian people, right? As you said, he's slaughtering them, sending them off to war for nothing, really. But I think we have to look at what the Jewish global interest plan is, right? Obviously, we know that there is this desire for world dominion. We know about this idea of the third temple, right? And having that erected. We know that, well, look at every world war that's occurred, right? The two main world wars, who benefited from each of these, right? World War One ended, the biggest prize of World War One, the best achievement that anybody gained from World War One. America didn't gain any land. We didn't gain soil. We didn't gain resources. We had a Great Depression, right? But they got their Balfour Declaration, right? The Jews got their claim to Palestine, which is what they've always wanted. Then World War Two ends. And who wins, right? America didn't gain anything from this. Every Western country has completely declined since the culmination of World War II. So therefore, yet again, you can see the only people that benefited were Jews in Israel, right? These people are now a financial, just the amount of money that they have over the rest of civilization in comparison per capita is absolutely absurd. It's incomparable to any other group of people. The amount of power that they have in every civilization that you can name, all of these Western countries, you know, look at our cabinet and our you know, government today. Look at the president of Mexico. You know, they got Zionists down in Argentina. They got everywhere you look, right? These people have control over the political body in all these countries. And they're not going to stop at that. So what they want in order to get their third temple and to get everything else completed, they're going to need another third world war. They're going to need another war as a premise so that they can get yet again another prize and everybody else suffers. And it's going to be a really big calling of our people. So it's one thing we need to avoid at all costs. We need to get power fast before they turn it into this, because if they do, before we gain power, it's going to get very bad for our demographics. I genuinely believe that we could be talking near extinction numbers if we don't work quickly.
That's a very interesting thought. Yes, another world war would be absolutely awful for our people. We already have so few of us now after the last two and then the last 60 years. on that rather grim note, I did have another question I wanted to talk about in the final 10, 11 minutes of the podcast, which is, are there any causes for hope, and how can we resist being blackpilled? Because it is important for us to not be blackpilled. We have to avoid despair, and we have to be motivated. So do you have any advice for people who may just be feeling hopeless from the H-1B stuff and from all of the awful stuff going on in our world?
Yeah, certainly. I love this question because I think it's a very important one. You know, a lot of people, they first wake up to these things, and they do. They become very depressed, very down, in a bad state of mind, realizing, you know, we've been lied to our entire lives and things are not what they seem. You know, to touch back where we were before, just very quickly, you know, you mentioned our demographics are extremely low, and there's not very many of us left. What's even more important is there are not many of us of high quality left, right? If we had all of our people that exist today, every single white Aryan person that existed today was of high value and high quality, our numbers would kind of be irrelevant, right? Because we would be able to take control of our civilizations. But you know, all you have to do is take a 10-minute walk in your average Walmart to see that the quality of our people has drastically declined in a way that is almost unimaginable. So if we want to get somewhere, what's very important to bring up the spirit of our people is we absolutely must start working on higher quality people. We have to start changing our behaviors, working from within, right? One of my favorite quotes I heard somebody say was, if you want to clean the Jew out of your country, first you have to clean the Jew out of yourself. And that's a really, really big quote that's very important. Is a lot of people are still living with that degenerated Jewish spirit, and they're not living correctly, right? What's best for them. So as a word of wisdom to help others that are maybe experiencing a blackpilled mindset or a lack of motivation at the current time, you know, this comes down to one of two things, right? And this isn't a blackpilled take. This is realistic. This is reality, right? This is very very stern. This is an ultimatum that we have right now. And that's you can either be blackpilled about it and whine on the couch and sulk about it and be upset. And then we certainly lose and we go extinct indefinitely. And you are a part of that problem and the cause of that. Or you recognize that if we don't win this, we are going extinct, so you have nothing to lose but to fight for, right? So we have two worlds that exist here. Either we win and we get to have control over our civilizations again, and we go back to these wonderful things like ancient Rome, National Socialist Germany, all of these magnificent civilizations that we've created with these incredible philosophies, wonderful architecture and art, or we lose and we go extinct, and then I guess it doesn't matter, right? So if we're going to go extinct, we'd actually prefer that, right? We'd prefer to go extinct rather than to lose and allow these degenerated scumbags rule over top of us, right? Does anybody want to be controlled by a Jewish world order where we're constantly oppressed and taxed to death and we're just wage slaves? Obviously, it would be better if we just fight till the end and either win or go extinct. I think those are the two extreme choices that we have here. But I don't think that's a blackpilling thing at all. I think that's it's a very positive thing because, as a great man once said, everything in this world is won through struggle. Nothing easy. Nothing is easy. Every good thing comes through struggle, and that's what we're in right now. We are in an eternal struggle, and it's our choice if we win or not.
Yeah, that's a very good point. A certain book about a person's struggle I would recommend. I guess I would also tie this back to Friedrich Nietzsche, because I think he's, when you're talking about just seeing the low quality, the decline in quality of our people in Walmarts, for example, these are not the Übermensch that Nietzsche wrote about in his various books. So I think this, while we're not individualists, we can work to better our individual selves, and then that'll help our race. It'll have downstream ripple effects as we inspire others, It's kind of like when you go to the gym with a friend, for example. You're both working on your own muscles, but you push each other to lift stronger, do more reps. Kind of like this, the idea of the manor boon, for example, if you want to look back in Aryan history. So I think you're very right to point that out. And we have to not be black-pilled, because if we are black-pilled, the morale of the troops matters. We need to give people hope. And I don't think things are hopeless for what that is worth. I think that time is cyclical. We're currently living in the Kali Yuga, as Julius Evola would say. But after the Kali Yuga ends, there will be a new golden age. I'm very big on cyclical time. And I think no one wants to be in this position where we're living in the age of degeneracy, but we are, and it falls to us to create the better time. We have to be the strong men who make good times, to quote the meme. So that's all I wanted to say on that topic. I think we can resist the black pill, and we should look towards each other and inspire each other to be better. So that's all my questions, Zach. I wanted to thank you for coming on, but I wanted to give you a chance. Are there any lingering thoughts or any other topics that you want to bring up?
No, I think you bring up a very good conclusion, and I want to second and agree with that conclusion, that it's about the quality of our people, right? And if we aren't creating Nietzsche's concept of the Übermensch, or at least working into that direction, what's the point in winning, right? If we win and all of our people are Walmart quality average people, it's not really a point in winning, is there? Do we want to have a society full of morbidly obese, 80 IQ white people, or do we want true Aryan nobility? And that's what I advocate for. And I think you hammered that home really well with your conclusion. That is absolutely what we need in order to move forward and have the true healthy civilization that we want. It's not just about us having power. It's about having the right people through power.
Well, absolutely, Zach. And as everyone knows, Aryan doesn't just refer to someone with blonde hair, blue eyes. It comes from the word meaning noble. So we have to be of noble character. If we're not noble, then we mean nothing. So, yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. Are there anything you would like to shill, for example, while we're on the conclusion portion of this video?
Yeah, sure. As I said at the beginning, I do my show a couple shows a week. It fluctuates how many shows I do a week, but I do my show on Odyssey. It's Logos Revealed on Odyssey. If you guys want to watch, every single show I've ever done is archived onto my Odyssey channel. And if you want to get connected with me, Twitter is a really good avenue for that. I've been growing on Twitter very fast. I think I'm almost at 19,000 followers now. I've only been on there for about a year. So you guys can contact me on Twitter. It's a Logos Revealed I. Again, Logos Revealed was taken, so I have the stupid I on the end of it. But I want to say thank you, brother, for having me on. This was a nice discussion. And I'm very happy. I'm honored to be the first guest on your podcast. And I wish you the best moving forward with new guests.
Well, thank you. It means a lot that you came on. Because when I was a smaller channel earlier this year, I don't forget the people who helped me grow. You were one of the first, actually, you were the first person who invited me on a show. And I really appreciated that. And it's helped me get up to over 700 subscribers this in 2024. I would also like to direct people specifically to your Logos Academy videos. They're the ones with the whiteboards in the backgrounds. And I think that's some of your best content. Maybe it's just because I'm a research nerd who loves to get into research. But yeah, I really enjoy the Logos Academy videos more than anything else. As for me, I would like to just show my Twitter. Go follow that and subscribe if you haven't. I'm planning on making Sigmar Symposium a weekly stream if I can get enough guests for it. And yeah, I'm hoping to improve my podcast skills. I'm still relatively new at this. I know I can be a little wordy at times, but in due time, I hope to improve and become a better podcaster. So that will wrap things up. Thank you, Zach, for coming on. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will see you all next time.